Chris Carey volunteers his time each week to select and research our classic picks of the week and then stops by to share his findings with us. It's always a pleasure to have Chris on. Welcome, good sir.
Oh, thanks for having me.
What do we got on tap today?
Yeah, today I figured we'd look at Stevie Wonder's Talking Book. It came out in October, so we're almost in October. October 1972, so 47 years ago. The amazing thing is Stevie Wonder, when he came out with this record, it was his 15th studio LP and he was only 22.
What?
Well, I mean,
seriously.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Well, he started.
Yeah, I guess he started very young.
He was kind of a child prodigy. Sang in church, played drums, piano, harmonica at a very young age, and he was signed to Tamla, which is one of a Motown imprint label, at the age of 11. And he was first known as Little Stevie Wonder. His first hit was a song called "Fingertips" in 1963, and throughout most of the 60s, he kind of sang what, you know, other people's songs. He didn't write much. He was still a kid, and you know, like a lot of kids, they do kind of what the older people, you know, suggest. And mm-hmm. So he was playing songs and doing songs that you know, the execs at Tamla and Motown wanted him to do. And he turned 21 in 1971, and with that he renegotiated his contract. And even though at the time he was a star, but he wasn't a huge star yet. But he did have enough clout that he was able to negotiate with Motown that he had more creative freedom. And he started off in 1971, he released Where I'm Coming From, which was one of the first albums that had a lot of songs that he wrote. He produced the album, and it was his first attempt really to deal with some social commentary and stuff. And it was released more or less about the same time as Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, which kind of overshadowed his record. It sold fine. It had a little bit of it charted on the Billboard charts, but not highly. In early 72, he came out with Music of My Mind, which kind of did this. It the critics liked it a little bit better, but again, it didn't do that well at the charts. It was just a moderate kind of success. Although both of those two albums, a lot of critics have gone back and said that's really when the classic Stevie Wonder period started, when he started doing his own stuff, and when he started not only producing his material, but writing most of his material and playing most of his material. I mean, he was multi-instrumentalist. He not only, most people see him on TV playing his keyboards, but he sings, he writes his songs, he plays keyboards, but he also plays harmonica. Since he's an amazing drummer. And so he played most of the tracks on this album. I mean, almost all of the tracks on almost all of the songs were him. There's a few guest musicians, Ray Parker Jr.
Oh, nice.
Who's cool. I love Ray Parker Jr. And so he plays guitar in a song. Jeff Beck plays guitar in a song. And there's only one song that has an actual bass. The rest of it was done with a Moog bass synthesizer. And so, you know, so he's production, and I should really talk about the synths here.
That was a huge part of it. No one had gone bananas quite on that level with the synthesizers. No. I mean,
synthesizers had been around for just a few years at this point. I mean, some of the earliest examples of using synths in music, I think, believe it or not, I think is Simon Garfunkel, and then the Beatles did, and they used synthesizers on Abbey Road that we talked about a few weeks ago. But Stevie Wonder used them like a huge amount in this album. There are songs with no bass guitar and no electric guitar that are just drums, keyboard, and synths. And like most of this album is like that. And that kind of blew people away in 1972. I mean, I think that more, you know, there had been some rock bands that did this, but nobody had done this in the soul world. I mean, soul and R&B for the most part was still pretty standard instrumentation, you know, drums, bass, guitar, keyboards, and that was about it. And so it kind of blew people away. And for that in and of itself, it's pretty interesting. Basically, you know, Stevie Wonder produced this record, but he worked with two guys who were kind of electronic pioneers that were in a little band. Only music geeks know them, Tano's Exploding Head Hand. Robert Margalef and Malcolm Cecil were the two members of that band. And Stevie Wonder brought them on to kind of co-produce / engineer, and they really helped him on this with doing the different layers of the different kinds of synths. He had three or four different kinds of synthesizers he was using at this on this record. And they also went, they went on to work with all sorts of people, not only in the R&B world, they also worked with like Devo and Depeche Mode and some other electronic bands later on. But, you know, so that in of, aside from the fact that this this album was hugely commercial, I mean, this was the this was Stevie Wonder's first gold record, and it was his he had two number one hits on this, you know, Superstition and I'm totally spacing the other one right now. Anyway, the You're the Sunshine of My Life.
Oh, sorry. There you go.
I totally spaced that for a second. Anyway, so this was hugely commercial successful. It was the first success for him, and it this was the album that kind of took him from somebody that a lot of people knew and liked to being a huge mega superstar. And it was also really cool is this is the first time where, I mean, if you step back and look at it, in some ways, I think you could argue that this was kind of the first album that kind of started the modern era of R&B and soul.
I think that's valid.
And I think that it's also really cool, too, is this is one of the first albums that kind of, I think, showed record execs that R&B and rock and everything kind of is a little bit more intermingled. It was really compartmentalized in the 60s, and then in the 70s, things started breaking down. And it was very cool, too, is right after he released this record, he was on tour with the Rolling Stones, and which I think...
Not, I wonder if they picked him in particular.
Yeah, I don't know story. I don't know how he got picked, but he was... So, I mean, he had quite the year in 1972. He released two records, and he toured with the Rolling Stones. So, and one of the records is a classic, and I think most people would consider this, the like I said, the first truly classic record that Stevie Wonder released. And it really is pretty amazing, given that, like I said, it pretty much was... his show. I mean, this was like, you know, I can't come up with a good analogy, but it was pretty amazing, and it really did blow people away.
Yeah.
You know, critically, it was loved from the get-go, and it ended up winning, I think he won three Grammys, and then Margalef and Cecil, the guys who helped him, they won a Grammy for the engineering work on the album, too, with the synthesizers. It was good from the beginning, and everybody's always thought it was good, and it's just increased in stature ever since. And it, you know, it's on every greatest of album list of all time. But you know, this, like I said, you could talk about Stevie Wonder forever. I'm sure there's been PhD dissertations on him, probably many. But I mean, you know, a few things about him that it is amazing. He sold well over 100 million albums, so he's firmly entrenched in one of the best-selling artists of all time. He's got 25 Grammys, which I think he's one of the highest Grammy winners of all time. And then I should also mention that he's been very involved in political activism and civil rights work throughout his life, and has won several awards in that arena as well.
Interesting. I didn't realize that. I mean, I knew about his activism, but I didn't know it was quite like on that level.
Yeah. I mean, he's been noted by, I think that he got a Lifetime Achievement Award from the National Civil Rights Museum. He's been named a United Nations Messenger of Peace. He's got the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Like he's,
wow.
Yeah, he's got some stuff he can put on his mantle.
Yeah, he probably has more than one mantle.
He's probably got one more than one house with more than one mantle. Yeah.
Yes, I think you are probably correct. I'm talking with Chris Carey about Stevie Wonder's talking book, our classic pick of the week. Other things to add before we get into your first selection here?
Nothing other than this track, Big Brother, which was the second track on the second side, was as the name suggests, influenced by Orwell's 1984. And like I said, this is one of the tracks on the album that Stevie Wonder played everything in the studio. He played a harmonica, the keyboards, the synths, and the drums.
Excellent.
And this song has no guitars or bass on it.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Chris. Great selection this week, as always.